Okay, welcome back. Any questions left over from before? All right, let's take a quick look at the section on the void, that there are times in life when, and I'm on page 77, when our faith falls flat and cannot help us at all. And this would not only be about faith, this would be about any source of comfort in yourself. There are times when you just feel desolate. You feel no comfort and gather no courage from it. We lose our taste for the transcendent. We lose our motivation for spiritual practice. And we feel no sense of an accompanying presence. So that would be the equivalent of why thou forsaken me. Sense of forsakenness. So that would be a first-hand experience, the forsakenness. And then you're told, well, you can always trust in God, and you can always call upon Him. But you would have to have an experience of that in order for it to be real for you. In such a void, we cannot know what's going on, no matter how smart we are. We cannot second guess or override this voiding of our power to escape from it. We can't go beyond it, even if we try with all our might. There seems to be no more in us, capital M. And the only thing we can do is say yes to it. So that would be an enormous challenge of faith. Can I go with the first line of Psalm 22, which is, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And then there's the first line of Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. So sometimes we're feeling forsaken, and sometimes we're feeling shepherded or cared about or accompanied, and we have no control over which position we'll be in. So faith would mean not that I never feel forsaken anymore, or not that I always feel that the Lord is my shepherd. Faith would be in these words from Psalm 23, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Yea, though I walk through. And yea means yes. So it's yes. And I walk through. And I'm never walking through alone, because all other humans have walked through also. They felt forsaken too. So when I say yes to the time, yes, the times I will feel forsaken, and yes, there are times when I'll feel accompanied, and all I can do is walk through. Whether I feel forsaken or accompanied, I walk through. That is my definition of faith. So it's doable, but you have to let go of the belief that you're entitled not to be forsaken because you've been such a good person. That will take you back to, well, if I was good, I should be rewarded. And you have to let go of, I'll always feel as if I am being taken care of and held. You have to say, I'm a human, so sometimes I feel either one of these. Everybody follow? And there is something about that image of the Pietà, Mary holding the dead body of Jesus. You can picture it with the statue of Michelangelo. And it has the combination in it. because she's holding, so she is there, she is holding, but it has a look of forsakenness about it. That's why it's so powerful, because it hits in both places. Because she is forsaken, she is alone, and yet at the same time she is holding. And that happens too. Sometimes we feel both. But our commitment is, yes, it's like that, and I walk through. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. So it's not a promise that he will, or someone, or something, or spirit, or however you imagine the transcendent, will help me skip over the valley. It will be a matter of walking through. Everybody follow? And that sometimes when you're in this void, it's hard to do this because it's so immobilizing that you don't even know if you can get that far. And as I say on the top of 78, now we know if we were seeking the consolations of God or the God of all consolation, who sometimes does not console. Yes?
Come at the distance, but you will. There was a song, I want to say late 1960s, maybe some of the rest of you remember it. If I can remember the words, I sing it. It was called How Can You Really Care? And to me, it says this because it goes the whole cycle. The being lost and then the finding God. How can you really care with fury everywhere? I look for God where he is, but I only see a wall. I turn to see the sun, but he is on the run. Just like the stars at night, my heart is going to fall. I am alone, I may be crying, but he is always there. I am God, where are you? Oh, where can you be? But I know, after all is said and done, that my God has known me since before all time, and I'll see his face. Yes. That was a long time ago.
Thank you.
That kind of goes
Pulls in the both directions. Mm-hmm. Good. Yes.
What I found really interesting is that it seems like it's in that forsaken place that so often we run away, or we create our own self-soothing behaviors to make us feel better, some of which can be extremely destructive in that time. And that the image of the P.A. Ta that you talked about is that she's holding death. She's not where she could have felt so forsaken in that moment and just gone off and on some sort of frivolous, what can I do to just feel better? But she's sitting there holding death.
That's what a wonderful point. Yes, but it was a loyalty to what is real rather than running for cover.
I like the, yes, though I walk through the dark valley, I fear no evil. It's something about your rod and your staff that give me courage.
Comfort.
And so both of those ideas, the rod, you know, the prodding, the challenge where it needs to be, and the staff, the crook that pulls you back in, you know, both of those things are, so it's challenge and consolation both as you walk through.
Yes.
That comes to you if you're willing to stay with it.
Mm-hmm. Good point, the comfort and challenge. Mm-hmm. Joanna?
I was thinking along these lines when Bernie asked this question about evolution, that really this to me would be a wonderful expression of what evolution is. that out of a chaos and a positive yes, evolution moves forward. And
yes.
it just, not only in the physical cosmos, but in the psychic cosmos and in the spiritual cosmos as well.
Mm-hmm. It's an evolutionary style. As opposed to just staying stuck or stand still or run for some type of addiction, escape. Mike?
I'm thinking in your work as a counselor and our work with one another, it's ministry at this level that is most being asked for by our friends and the family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. So,
I was wondering about the word witnessing now. It seems like that would be witnessing our own selves.
Yes. I'm walking through as a witness of what's going on.
Right.
Yes.
It seems like it takes it back into the AA one step at a time.
Right.
Steps. He's walking through.
It says volumes more about steps.
Yes. And in the program, there are witnesses to your steps. So it's not just that you're the witness, but others are witnessing you. Jim?
I think the valley of the shadow could also be interpreted as the valley of the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not as fearful, but, it's, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, unknown and uncertain. I mean,
the shadow and the union.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I know when I'm in those places where I just feel like crap and I don't know the way out, and I know that I'm not forsaken. By God, I know that whatever I'm experiencing really has to do, it's more of an opportunity for me to accept and love myself. To accept whatever this is, that I don't know what it is, and that it's okay that I'm in this, and just walk through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Yes.
There's something very powerful and mysterious about when we're walking through those times in our lives to praise God in the middle of it. And it isn't necessarily an emotional feeling. It isn't driven by feeling. It's an intellectual act of the will. But if we will do that, praise God or higher power, in the middle of that walking through, miracles happen.
Yes.
And our faith grows so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yes. And the walking through is praise in itself. But she's also saying if you could make that more conscious. So instead of faith being thought of as, well, I assent to a list of beliefs, look how much more close to one's heart this is. This is about our actual life. How faith is about our actual life compared to he is consubstantial with the Father. Which has meaning, but it doesn't touch us at this level.
I was making a comment on when you're in the void that you're not thinking about God. I mean, everything is so blank and dark. Just there's no process.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Be closer to God now. I mean, over time. But right at the time you're in it, it's
hard to remember.
Like you can't think.
Yeah. Yes. Good point. Yes.
The big difference between faith and belief. Mm-hmm. And my definition of belief is what happens to me.
Mm-hmm. Saying yes to that. Well, I'm so glad you're all on the same page with this. And it happens to all of us at some point in life. On the top of page 80, our ego is the part of us that believes in separateness. In other words, the part that's not saved. The saved part is the part that believes that we're all one, we're all connected. But this part of us that believes only in ego, in Latin means I, the Roman, the capital letter I. The ego is confronting its actual condition in the adult world. It has no real ground on which to stand securely, and it never has, this king of ashes. So it was never this idea that, oh, it's all about me and my entitlements. That is finally revealed as not really going anywhere. And then in the last paragraph on page 80, the habits, bulwarks, dramas, relationships, addictions, and people that we gathered around us helped us stave off this ultimate moment. They were the fill-ins that joined us in the game of avoidance of the void, avoidance of the full surrender of ego. And all that is really collapsing is the illusion of security, because only illusion can collapse. Our shell, our armor is being dismantled, and our true inner self remains. In the terror of this moment, such a realization may not be a comfort. Our main fear may be not being able to die then and there. But somehow we were walking through it. And on page 85, I have the walking through the valley of the shadow. So when you walk through, one of the results is there's nothing left to fear. If you look on paragraph 3 on page 85, if nothing works and we still survive, we have learned that there is nothing to fear ever again. I survived without support means I have no need of my usual supports. I am my own companion sometimes. God as comrade can be I, and in certain moments, I am the more. This is the access to the God within. Our challenge is not to fill ourselves. Being a hollow bamboo does the most to help us grow into spiritual adulthood. And I, when I was writing this, I happened to find a Chinese poem by Tu Fu. He's a poet of the 8th century, and I included it in this section. Now on 86, the paragraph before, we try so hard to avoid ever having to face the void, yet to contain and relax into our own emptiness makes room for a deeply compassionate love to emerge. Vacancy becomes spaciousness, and we open ourselves to all who suffer as we do. This is how our aloneness plays a key role in the release of our unconditional love. It makes us connected to everyone. And it may seem that the void and all the givens of existence are negative or punitive, but actually they're the necessary ingredients for human evolution and spiritual maturity. And then the last line of a poem by the Chinese poet Tu Fu is, this is the last line of the poem, imagine. I am lost between sky and earth like a gull, like a seagull. This is the last line. In other words, he's willing to end it there. He's not going to come up with some fancy way of feeling better. I am lost between sky and earth like a gull floating around the sky. And we notice in this line that he does not ask to be saved, to be given information about any direction or condition. He asks nothing, but only notices where he is, as if anywhere I am is gifts enough.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm here in the void. That's gift enough. As opposed to, oh, show me the way out. Likewise, Emily Dickinson wrote, moving on in the dark, like loaded boats at night, though there is no course, there is boundlessness. I mean, I know where I'm going, but wow, it's a big boundless place here. As if the boundlessness, also without comforting borders or directions, was itself a grace. Mm. Everybody follow? Mm-hmm. Yes.
A good example of synchronicity, I had just finished reading this chapter, and I heard these seagulls outside, so I go out, and they are way up, way up, just, and you know, with wheels really windy, they were just, isn't that cool?
Yes.
There they are.
That's a wonderful synchronicity.
Yeah, gorgeous. I was like, yeah.
It's like nature joining in.
No kidding.
Good. Other comments about this?
Just a question.
Yeah.
Imagine I'm a Japanese and I've been hit by a tsunami that has wiped away everything I know and own. Is that the same kind of void that you're writing about here?
Because yes, that would be the same void in a physical way, where it actually happens.
So you're not distinguishing between physical voids and internal?
No, I'm talking about the internal one in this chapter, but of course it can happen externally too. And any disaster, or simultaneously. Yeah, that would be a messy situation. You're in the void, and then everything, and then there's an earthquake. Would really be testing your faith. Jenny.
This one line, then the only prayer is yes. I don't remember the exact words of Dag Hammarskjöld, but I remember reading and being so taken. He didn't remember. You probably know it exactly.
Yeah.
To what or to who or to something, but he found himself saying yes.
For all that has been, thank you. For all that is to be, yes. Something like that.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a perfect prayer. And that quote at the end of the chapter by Alan Watts, who was an Episcopal minister who then became a Buddhist, the deepest you is the nothing inside, the side which you don't know. Don't be afraid of nothing. Okay, any final questions? Yeah.
Before we leave the void,
yeah.
You wrote to this, but you didn't in the discussion, the difference between the void and the clinical depression.
Oh, yeah. I have my chart, because sometimes it comes up, well, is this really depression? So if you look on 84, I have my chart that shows the difference between depression and the void, as far as I can understand it.
It's a hard division.
It's difficult,
because
yes.
The statement, if you only had more faith, to someone who was in depression.
Yeah.
It's a tough
statement. It's a tough one. This is not depression. This is like a even a lower level of desolation. And I presume many of us have been there. I know I have many times. And it eventually lifts, and no drug would help you with this. Whereas drugs might help with depression. Did I put that on here?
No.
Oh, yeah, it could affect the health for medication. Yeah.
Another area that I wondered about, on page 93, there are a couple of statements. At the end of the first paragraph, top, bottom of the first paragraph, we look under the doctrines and images for what reflects the human journey and how they can help us to take it. And then toward the bottom of the page, our adult task is to look for the meaning beyond the personifications and story forms. Religious truths are metaphors that are more than historically true. They are metaphors of our own intra-psychic life and our personal and collective destiny, all mysteries about our wonder-filled life. My question, or the challenge that I find here, is it seems like this is very difficult to do. You know, when you study or read scripture, you listen to the stories of the Bible, it seems difficult sometimes to go beneath those images, you know, beneath the story forms, to identify the message behind the message, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's natural for us to think in terms of images and personalities. If you look at your own thoughts, you notice that many images come up and personalities come up. You think about people and you picture certain things. And that happens in religion too. A religion takes advantage of this automatic default setting of the mind to go to an image or go to a personality, and the mind does many things, or gives you two of the things it does often. And so religion will take images and personalities to tell the story of faith. We used the example last time of, let's say, the Archangel Michael, who leads the good angels, and the Archangel Lucifer, who leads the rebellious angels. So it's easier to think of two personalities whom you can picture. If you can picture Michael with armor, and you can picture Lucifer with a trident spear and horns, and this makes it easier to understand the story. But the story is really about the Michael and Lucifer in all of us, and that there will always be some type of battle in ourselves between the part that rebels against the kingdom of justice, peace, and love, and the part that supports it. So if we think of these two instead of as actual personalities, if we think of them instead as personifications, which means a thought that is turned into a personality, if you think of them this way, then you no longer project the idea of good and evil into categories somewhere in the atmosphere, and you bring them right down to yourself. Realize that that book I had mentioned, Going Out of Character, I'll bring next week and show you. The subtitle is something like, you know, the sinner and saint in all of us, so that we all have both sides in us. But this is a color, what this Michael and Lucifer is a colorful way of making the point. The problem is, instead of it being thought of as personifications, something about all of us, it's taken literally as there are actual characters now one up and one down who have names like this and who look like the pictures, the images that we were brought up with. So part of becoming an adult is not to throw away the images, you can still appreciate them, but now you see them as ways of describing energies in all of us. Does this make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Rather than literal people. But your name?
Pardon me?
Michael.
Yeah, Michael Lucifer. I can't let you off or let you get away today without getting your reaction or what's inside of you to some Catholics. Some of us are, just some of us, never mind Catholic, are uncomfortable with the personification of Osama bin Laden as totally Lucifer. And there's a Catholic church in Florida that's praying for Osama bin Laden in the prayer of the faithful and causing great stir.
Mm, interesting.
Our Lady, Holy Name of Jesus Catholic Church.
And well, they're very, sound very advanced.
Yeah.
Don't they?
He has not one parishioner said he has no right to be included in our faith.
Or in our circle of caring and love.
And so my wife and I were discussing that. I said, I think we're uncomfortable condemning him totally and holding ourselves up as totally Michael.
Yeah. And by the way, he's bringing up a good point, because politically the same thing happens. So, you know, there's to talk about bin Laden as Lucifer, and we're the Michael with the armor and so forth. You see, it's the same usage of personifications. So until you acknowledge that, well, I have both these energies in me, and you don't quite see it. And once you see that you have both of the energies in you, then you would extend your prayer of the faithful to everyone. You wouldn't exclude anybody. So that church sounds very advanced. Macklin?
I'm wondering, too, about the use of Michael and Lucifer as personifications, because I don't see the feminine there. And I
good point.
Like more, if you would go into it more, pulling the feminine in.
Call me Michelle.
Lilith was the was an earth goddess whom the Hebrews in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, saw as the evil feminine force. So she's the evil feminine demon.
On Cheers.
Yeah. Right. Are you telling
what that means? Yeah, it's comedy.
It's myself.
Right. Yeah.
So that would be the feminine version of Lucifer. And obviously, Mary would be the positive energy.
Okay. Bishop Desmond Tutu, who was in town last week, basically said the same thing as Michael. He said he was disturbed by the rejoicing Bin Laden died, and basically the same philosophy.
Yeah. Good point. Yes?
You sort of said this in so many words, but it just feels like it's the Lucifer or the Lilith quality is what we just push so far into our unconscious. And so...
Yes.
Kind of look at it in Jungian terms, it's like these figures emerge in public forum and we cannot recognize them, or if we were, we have to admit that they're dwelling in that.
Exactly.
And then the other thought I had is if you, that really it's that, like, the combining of Michael and Lucifer together that is sort of that transcendent function, let's say, but the fact where something new can emerge in the third, that's not...
The transcending third, yes.
Yeah.
Which would be that which is able to combine and work with these energies? Barbara?
Well, you think maybe the killing of bin Laden was a way of trying to obliterate the darkness in ourselves?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And thinking, oh, this does it. Now it's
pops up somewhere else.
Yeah, but they'll have a new person that takes place. as there always has been. There was a Hitler, keeps going back. Yes.
But they call the U.S. the Great Satan, so...
We all use these terms, yeah. And these are all, the word for this is projection. So you project the energies that are in yourself onto others and believe that it's only out there instead of in here. So many of these personifications are deducting energy from us. Because now I'm losing contact with my Michael and Lucifer energy, my Lilith and Mary energy, because I have it all out there. See how this takes away some of our power as humans.
Well, I remember when like the students were out on the street and other people, and I thought, wow. And a lot of people were judging that. But then somebody else came on the news and said, well, we're judging them, and they have a right to do what they're doing. But a lot of it was just energy. They're young kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how old are we? And what would we have done at that age? I'm not going to have to sleep while I'm already too. So we're projecting our beliefs too. It just goes around and around.
Yes, it does.
I just want to point out that Richard Rohr calls this two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
The side and the good side.
Yes. That's in all of us. Yeah.
A number of years ago, I saw a documentary that took place in Bali about a ceremony that happens every 100 years. If I recall correctly, it was called something like Rota Rudra. And it was an attempt to deal with the forces of evil. And the people created elaborate flowers out of animal fats and took them down to the ocean. They were floating in the water and they waited for the evil force to come. And when it came, they would know whether the evil forces had accepted or not accepted these gifts and all of the ceremonials that went into that. And if the evil forces did accept the gifts, then they knew that good and evil would be in balance for the next 100 years. And not, in other words, not to overcome evil, but to keep good and evil in balance. And when the credits were running, on the screen, it said the people of Bali, these individuals, want viewers to know that they conduct this ceremony every 100 years, not just for themselves, but for all mankind.
Mm-hmm. Good. So that would be the sense of salvation. It's not just us that we're asking protection for. It's always for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like a good way of bringing this into your own consciousness is every time you pray for something, let's say you're praying that your son will no longer use drugs. Always end your prayer with, and I'm also praying for all the mothers and all the sons all over the world who have the same problem I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You always want to include that makes it more real, because we're all in this together. Everybody follow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next time we're going to go to, I'm going to end with a poem, but next time it's reading from chapter 6 from 112 on. And I realize I'm only up to page 89, so I'll start from there next time. And we'll still spend some time on this chapter 5, because we had a lot to talk about today. But I'd like to end with this beautiful poem by St. John of the Cross, in which he describes his dark night of the soul, which is the void. And this this for him led to more of a contact with Christ. It's as you will hear, it's beautifully written. It's translated from Spanish. And it kind of tells the story in a very simple way. Upon a deep dark night, lit only by the anxiousness of love, O venture of delight, with nobody in sight, I went abroad when all my house was hushed. In darkness, in disguise, in silence, up the secret stair I crept. O happy enterprise, concealed from other eyes, while all my house at length in silence slept. Upon that lucky night, inscrutable to sight, I went without discerning, and with no other light, except for that which in my heart was burning. It lit and led me through, more certain than the light of noonday clear, to where one waited near, whose presence well I knew, there where no other presence might appear. O night that was my guide, O darkness dearer than the morning's pride, O night that joined the lover to the beloved bride, transfiguring them each into the other, within my flowering breast, which only for himself entire I save, he sank into his rest, and all my gifts I gave, lulled by the airs with which the cedars wave. Over the ramparts, and while the fresh wind was fluttering his tresses, with his serenest hand my neck he wounded, and suspended every sense with his caresses. Lost to myself, I stayed, my face upon my lover having laid, from all endeavor ceasing, and all my cares releasing, I tossed them among the lilies, there to fade. Thank you all.